Okay, we are in 1 Samuel. If this, if you have not been around, we're in chapter 4, and we've been jumping around with the narrative a little bit. Today, the story continues. A quick recap if you haven't been around. Basically, things are in bad shape in Israel. It's terrible. In those days, Israel had no king. This is throughout the book of Judges, so all of the most violent, horrific tragedies, in my opinion, the terrible stories of the Bible have been through Judges, and we get to 1 Samuel, and this baby is born, and this baby, and the way that I've talked about it, is going to be this hero who's going to change things. That's the quick narrative. Talked a little bit about Eli. He was the priest, kind of the last of the priests, and his sons are a wreck. So the story continues today, and it's one of those stories, again, sometimes you just have to tell the story, because the story has, power, I guess, something. So the story continues, and there's war. And anytime there's war in a story, you know, things are starting to get a little exciting. So we have the Israelites who are camped in Ebenezer. I'm going to wait for them to figure out the sound, because it's distracting for me. We'll just do a sound check. Check. Okay, there we go. Yeah, I like that. Okay. Israelites are camped in Ebenezer, and the Philistines are camped in a different camp. And there is about to be a battle. Israelites go up and say, let's take them down. Remember, we talked about last week, the Philistines are the enemy of Israel. So there's this huge battle in which 4,000 Israelites are killed. Now imagine, we read these numbers very often, 4,000 people. 9/11 was 2,500. 4,000 people of your warriors killed. A lot of grief, a lot of mourning. And the Israelites come back and they gather together and they say, what happened? And the verse goes like this. Why did the Lord bring defeat on us today before the Philistines? Let us bring the Ark of the Lord's covenant from Shiloh so that he may go with us and save us from the hand of our enemies. So you can imagine the Israelites gathering together. We just lost 4,000 people. What happened? We don't lose battles. You guys, I got it. God wasn't with us. We need to bring the ark. We've talked a little bit about the ark. The ark is a box where God dwells. So they honestly have this idea of, we need to bring God. We didn't bring God to the battle, you guys. Oh my gosh, okay. Let's go get the ark. We'll bring God. That's probably why we lost. So they send people back to Shiloh, where Eli's sons are, probably with some women at the tent of meeting. If you weren't there for that Sunday, Eli's sons like to hang out with the women who served at the tent of meeting, something God did not appreciate. So they're there and they say, hey, we need the ark, we need to take it. Eli's sons, they presumably join the battle because of what happens later. So the ark is carried from Shiloh back to the camp at Ebenezer. And the story goes on that when the ark arrives, this place starts to go crazy. So think of your favorite battle scene in some movie. I don't know what it is, but they're all kind of the same. And they have this buildup of the people just and the sound in the theater, and you just start to feel the hairs rise on the back of your neck. Like, I just want to go throw a spear right now. I want to hurt somebody. And it's just this. And the story says the ground is shaking and the ground is trembling because the Israelites finally have God. So the God is coming into the camp and it's these guys are going down. Now the story says that the Philistines also notice this and they say, what's going on? And they say, a God has come into the camp. Oh no. Probably a clean translation. These are the Philistines, after all. I mean, they're the enemy. They don't talk like, oh no. Gosh darn it. Nothing like this has happened before. We're doomed. Who will deliver us from the hand of these mighty gods? They are the gods who struck the Egyptians with all kinds of plagues in the wilderness. Be strong, Philistines. Be men, or you will be subject to the Hebrews as they have been to you. Be men and fight. Now, again, I mean, this is a movie. Again, you just picture, every movie's all blurring together right now, but it's Aragorn riding on his horse, charging up the guys on the horses, you know, men of the West. It's just Philistines, there's a God in the camp. We have to fight like men, 300. I mean, we're outnumbered. They have a God. We're going down, riling them up. Listen to them trembling. Well, we've got to pound our spears. Battle. Guess what happens? The Israelites lose 40,000. They're crushed. Whoa! The God was in the war. They're annihilated. Sent back with their tails between their legs to their little camps. The Philistine pump up worked better than the Israelite getting jacked up. They just destroy them. So not only do 40,000 people die, again, 3,000 a lot, 40,000, sorry, 30,000, it was 4,000 earlier, 30,000 at this point, really. But the Philistines take the ark. They take the God. Now, the story that Annie read while that song was going on is the story we talked about a few weeks ago. Eli's two sons are killed in this battle among the 30,000. He hears about that his sons have died. He hears about that the ark was taken, that God, that their God was taken. He keels over and dies. His daughter-in-law is giving birth to a baby. She hears that her husband is dead, that her father-in-law just died, but most importantly, that the ark is gone and that God has left Israel. And we kind of say, God left Israel in a symbolic, metaphorical way. No, God literally left Israel. God was in the box, and now the Philistines, our enemy, has taken God. We've lost God. Now the story goes on. The Philistines take the ark to Ashdod, which is the temple of Dagon, which we talked about last week. Dagon was their god, with a holy of holies, with his own statue. And they put the ark in the holy of holies next to the statue of Dagon. Now the story goes that the first night that the ark is there, the statue falls over on its face as though it's bowing toward the ark. So one statue is bowing toward another statue, if you want to be kind of crude about it. So the Philistine priests walk in. Oh my, whoa, what's happening here? This is weird. The statue fell over, must have been a breeze. Let's set the statue back up where Dagon belongs. Sorry, oh God, Dagon. I don't know if they had rules where you couldn't touch the statue or what, kind of like the Israelites did. They set Dagon back. Night number two, Dagon falls again as though Dagon is worshiping the box. Okay, getting a little weird. Put Dagon back up. Night number three, Dagon falls again and his hands and feet fall off on the threshold of the Holy of Holies. And Dagon is again bowing toward the ark. And to this day, the story says, the priests will not walk on the threshold. Because something crazy happened there that night. Now, the story isn't just the idol falling. It also says this: the Lord's hand was heavy on the people of Ashdod and its vicinity. He brought devastation on them and afflicted them with tumors. When the people of Ashdod saw what was happening, they said, "The ark of the God of Israel must not stay here with us, because his hand is heavy on us and on Dagon, our God." So they called together all the rulers of the Philistines and asked them, "What shall we do with the ark of Israel?" So it's in this town, Ashdod. Everyone starts getting tumors. Not a good thing. What do we do? Well, the thing is, that box has been in our temple with Dagon. Dagon's been worshiping it. Let's move the box. So they move the box to another city of Gath. Guess what happens in Gath? Everyone gets tumors. People are dying. Obviously, the people of Gath, we're not sure we like the box being here. Can we send it on to somewhere else. Yeah, let's move it on to Akron. So they move it on to another city. Everyone there gets tumors. Many people begin to die. Those who don't die are afflicted with tumors. So the Philistines, after having the ark in their land for 7 months, the God of Israel, this box of the God of Israel, gather together the divinators and the magicians and the priests, and they say, we have a problem here. I don't know if anyone's noticed, but we're all dying or getting tumors. We think it's because of this box. What should we do? So they have a meeting. The divinators of the Philistines say, well, we should definitely send the God back. But if we're going to send this box of this God back, we need to appease the God. I mean, we can't just send the box back empty-handed to the God or send this God. I mean, again, the language is very, is this the God or not? Okay, but if we're going to send it back, we need to have an offering. Okay, great idea. What should be in the offering? How about 5 golden tumors? Good idea. I like that. 5 for the 5 Philistine rulers. They've been afflicted just as the people have been afflicted. Obviously, let's make them gold because gold is valuable, and that's what you would give a god who you're worried about ticking off a little more. And we'll make them tumors because we've all had tumors. Again, wonder what this golden tumor looked like. Maybe it's just a little blob. I don't know, but there's another interesting thing. Let's not just do 5 golden tumors. Let's also do 5 golden rats. 5 golden rats. Interesting. The story never mentions anything about rats until this point. Rats and tumors or a plague. Interesting. 5 golden tumors, 5 golden rats. Let's put them on the side of the box. We don't want to open up the box. We don't know what that would do. Let's put them on the side of the box. And hold on, guys, I'm not done yet, says the divinator. Let's put the box on a cart. And then let's find 2 cows that have recently given birth. And they're about ready to let their calves go. Let's attach them to the cart. And let's get 2 cows that have never been yoked. So they've never had anything on their backs and been forced to carry something. Let's hook them up to this cart. Let's take their calves away and put them back towards our side of the spot. And let's see what these cows do. If the cows walk toward Israel, then we'll be sure that their God has been punishing us. If, however, the cows walk back to us, then it's just circumstance, time, and chance. Not sure how many of you ever do stuff like this. Okay? Probably not to this degree, but I've heard stories. Should I move to North Carolina? Oh my gosh, you guys, I saw a license plate of North Carolina. In Seattle, what are the chances? I think it's a sign from God. Now again, you can look on this as, I kind of look on it as, so you're going to use time and chance to find out if God is punishing you or if it's time and chance. It's kind of like, ding! If it's head, it's God. If it's tails, it's not. Ooh. But of course, they set the odds, right? Because these cows surely wouldn't walk and they would go back to their calves, etc. Okay, so the cows, they get the box of God and they start walking, and the verse says this, which is my favorite. Then the cows went straight up toward Beth Shemesh, keeping on the road. I don't know, I just thought that one was funny. So there's a road and they keep on it. They didn't completely set the odds against them. The cows didn't walk off into the fields, okay? Kept on the road, and lowing all the way, they did not turn to the right or to the left. So the story goes on. People are working in their fields, harvesting the sad Israelites, and here comes God on a cart being pulled by 2 cows who are, and they start going crazy. Oh my gosh, the ark is back. God is back. So they kill the cows. sacrifice them. They take the wood of the cart and burn it and make a little nice little altar. There's a stone there, so hey, let's set this up. This is a beautiful place now. And the ark is back and everyone is pretty happy. Except the story can't end on a positive note like that, right? Turns out the Israelites open the ark. This is a no-no. This is where it gets weird. Either 70 or 50,070 people die. We don't know. In the NIV, it says the copyists messed up the numbers. Again, this is the kind of stuff, for those of you who say, hey, I just go with the word of God, literal Bible says it. The NIV translators say, yeah, we think the copyists messed up the numbers here. It's not really 50,070, it's just 70. Okay, that's pretty large margin there of error. And then some will say, well, the way the Hebrew's written is that it was 50 people and 70 cows, or maybe in the Hebrew it's just, it's very confusing, blah, blah. Okay, either way, people died looking in the ark. And it's hard to imagine 70 people gathered around this thing looking into it and dying. It's much harder to imagine 50,070 people looking into the thing. We don't know what happened, but there was mass devastation and a lot of people died, even though God was back. And that's the story. Okay, everyone, I think you know what you've heard from God today. Let's pray. So that's the story. So a few problems with the story I have on the first read. One, God doesn't live in a box. Do we know? I think we know this. God doesn't go to war with you in a box. You don't say, hey, oh, the reason we lost is we didn't bring God in the box. So let's bring the box over. Oh, gosh, God left because God was in the box. And the Philistines, oh, gosh, they have a god in their camp because they brought the box. I mean, this is the most primitive. What the heck is wrong with these people? Everyone's just going along with these little statues and idols thing. And this is not real. This is not true. Shouldn't say real. It's not true. Which makes you read the story and go, well, if that isn't true, their whole perspective on this, and I think everyone would agree, God does not live in a box. And if you take the box, you will win the war, which I think probably part of what God was trying to show. Oh, yeah, you brought me. Good job. Still lost 30,000 of you. But if that's not accurate, what else isn't? That's just where I go. Does God really give tumors to people who store this weird box in their town? Is that how God rolls? Again, coming back to Jesus, who says, if you've seen me, you've seen God. I'm the best image of God. I just don't see Jesus cursing people with a bunch of tumors all the time. But you go, okay, I don't know. And then you start thinking of all this. I mean, how did they even get this story? And who was in the temple? What Israelite was in the temple to even hear about this statue falling over? Or did they hear it from some Philistine later when they became friends, which they didn't? How did they hear about this meeting of the leaders where they determined to do the tumors? And how did they hear about all the stuff that was happening? I mean, where does this kind of information even come from? And does God really kill people who just look in the box? And why didn't God kill all the Philistines? Because if you're going to go back to the rules for the box, you're not even supposed to put the box on a cart. You're not supposed to touch the box. Other people die later for touching the box. You're supposed to use it with these poles. Did the Philistines do all that? And if they didn't, then why didn't God kill the Philistines? He had more grace for them, Israel's enemy, than he did for Israel, who looked in the box. Is this, what? I mean, and then at the end, is this story really about how the verse ends it? And the people of Beth Shemesh asked, who can stand in the presence of the Lord, this holy God? To whom will the ark go up from here? Is this the point of the story? Who can stand in the holy presence of God? Because some would say that is the point. That's the point. You cannot stand in the presence of God with sin. And you'll hear that often. And I say, well, I mean, I guess that's true, except when Adam and Eve sinned in the very first story of sin, God came right around and walked with them. God seems to be fine standing in the presence of sin. I mean, so is that the point? Who can stand in the holy presence of God? And I could get up here and give a fire and brimstone sermon for you this morning. make you all freaked out. You all better be careful. There's a holy God who's about to give you tumors if you don't. So maybe there's a little bit more to the story. Let me go through the story again one more time, thinking of some things that happened before the story. There are people, the Israelites, and they believe they are God's chosen people. They believe they are God's chosen race. They believe they are the people who are to show the world how to live. And I don't say that lightly. Just because they believe it doesn't make it wrong or right. But they definitely believe it. And God shows up on some pretty radical instances throughout their history. God shows up in pretty powerful ways. Here are three of them. One of them, they're stuck in Egypt. Moses and Aaron come along. They're the leaders who are going to get them out of Egypt. And Moses and Aaron both have these staffs, or these rods, and these staffs are powerful. I mean, Aaron's staff, at one point he's with the Egyptian pharaohs, and he throws down the staff and it turns into a snake. And then Pharaoh looks at his guys and says, whoa, can we match this? And they say, yes. And they throw down their staffs and they all turn into snakes. And then the snake that Aaron's staff turned into eats all the other snakes. Which, again, he's like, wow, okay. Glad we're not preaching on that this morning. But anyway, they eats all the other snakes. This staff, I mean, this thing is awesome. And then a little bit later, in Israel, all the tribes, they don't know who the priests are supposed to be. So they start to have this rebellion. Because who is really supposed to be the priest? Who are the ones who are supposed to go into the box and be there and take care of it? And this tribe says, we are. The tribe of Aaron says, we are. No, we are, we are, we are. So God says, first, a bunch of them die and get sick. Then God says, okay, to end this, every tribe put your staff in a spot. And in the morning, the rod or the staff that does something special that will prove they are the tribe that's supposed to take care of the box. So the staff of Aaron buds overnight. Branches, flowers, sweet-tasting nuts, almonds. Whoa, tribe of Aaron. That's the one. I mean, you can just imagine him. Anybody want to fight now? Okay, so they leave Egypt. And we know the story. They're stuck in the desert for a long time. And God feeds them this manna, this little stuff that appears in the morning, sweet like honey. They do all kinds of stuff with it. It appears all the time. And they eat this stuff. And they treasure it. You can imagine. This is the time when God fed us. And then story goes on, go up onto a mountain, and God gives them these commandments on how to live as a society and as a people. They're written in stone, the Ten Commandments. Now, what's interesting about the Ark is that these three things are put inside of it, at least according to Hebrews, which again gets more weird Bible stuff. In Hebrews, it talks about these things being in the Ark, even though it never does in any of the Old Testament. But let's go with Hebrews for now. The staff of Aaron, a golden jar of manna, and the Ten Commandments are put in the Ark. And God gives them commands for this box, very specific commands on how to build this with gold and angels on top of it and how to carry it and so on. And so you start to get this idea that this box has tremendous value for these people. And for some of you who are saying, yeah, I don't know, they're so primitive. I want to show you a clip from a movie. It's my favorite clip from the movie. And once it begins, you will see. Okay, so here we go. Anybody see that movie? Castaway. Tom Hanks, he's on an island for months, years. Wilson is a volleyball. Wilson. And Wilson becomes this incredibly important thing / friend to Tom Hanks. And honestly, if you see the movie, you almost cry at this scene. Oh my gosh, he's losing Wilson. Oh, Wilson, no. It's a volleyball. And it's a movie. And it only took me an hour and a half to be moved to tears. Go back to Israel. This is a box. This box contains some of our best moments with God. Oh, but put the staff in there. Remember when God proved the tribe that would take care? Remember when he freed us from Egypt? Remember when God fed us in the desert? Remember when God gave us the rules on that mountain? I mean, do you remember when Moses went up there and God was speaking? Put them in the, this is how we're to build the box. Don't touch the box. Don't touch it. Imagine being raised with the box is over there in the tent in the Holy of Holies. That's our God. I mean, this is God. This is everything about us. When God has saved us, it's all in that box. And oh, be careful. We're going to war. We lost. You guys, we didn't bring God. We got to bring God, remember? And you go, oh, that's so primitive. And then you think of Tom Hanks. He would bring the volleyball. He'd bring Wilson. Wilson, you got to come. We got to bring the box, you guys. Bring it. God, you're here now. Everyone, yes, God is here. The box, remember all the times. We're going to crush the Philistines now. We didn't. We got crushed. They took, oh my gosh, there it goes. That scene, it's drifting away. There's the ark for these guys lying there, dead bodies everywhere. Oh, they're taking the box. It's gone for 7 months. We don't have God. God has left us. Depression, anxiety. Then they start hearing these stories. Did you hear that people are dying in Philistine? You're dying in these cities. They're bringing our God, and they just start getting these tumors, and they're dying. Oh my gosh, I wonder. Yeah, that's our God. Yeah, mm-hmm. And then God appears over the hill one day being pulled by cows. The box is back. My gosh. It's back. God has returned. I mean, I went from being kind of angry at the Israelites, and what is the point of this story, to this sadness or this compassion or this wow. Even if you want to be the world's worst skeptic, this box meant the world to them. The biggest skeptic in the world would say, well, look, the volleyball could. This box was everything. So you all have a little box beneath you right now. If you don't, there's some extras up here. I want you to take your little box out. Some of them are flat. You'll have to figure out to fold them. But don't worry. The Israelites had to figure out how to make one. It was very specific. They had to have craftsmen to do this thing very exact. So make your little box. Some of you are really good at making boxes. So I want you to honestly, let's take this serious for a minute. Look at that box. Imagine, I want you to think of your best moments with God. Think in your life. Maybe it was the camp experience, the classic camp experience. God spoke to me at that camp that night. Maybe it was the time you were in the doctor's office and you were about to get the results of the tests, and God spoke to you and said, you're okay, and you were. Maybe it was the time you prayed for a friend, and the friend called you the next day and said, you won't believe it, I'm healed. Maybe it was the time where you were really sick and you just felt God was close to you. But we all have these moments when God was there. So imagine putting some elements of those into that box. I mean, this is when God is real. Most of us in this room probably have a moment when God was real. And we go back to it a lot when we feel like God isn't real. Yeah, but I remember. I mean, for me, you're going to start branches. You're going to start a church. What? That would be in there. God told me to do this. And look, it's working. So we have these moments. And now I want you to imagine, and this is going to be one of those sermons that might continue throughout the week for you. I'm not necessarily going to end it this morning. I want you all to take the box home. And imagine, even for us in our modern day and age, putting the box on your windowsill in the kitchen. Get up in the morning, washing the dishes. Oh, there, yeah, I remember that camp experience. You know, God, thank you. Thank you that you're real, you're here. You're going to the doctor tomorrow for the tests. I'm going to bring the box. I want to bring this box. I'm going to bring it. I'm going to put it in my car dashboard because it'll remind me not to get mad when the guy cuts me off. You know, God is here. I mean, you start to think this box would actually start to have quite a bit of power and over us. Now, of course, we know God's not in the box, right? And yet, well, God's here at this conversation. You don't mind, do you? We're having coffee, but I brought God here. Just to be here in our midst, in our conversation. And then imagine you do this for a week, and then maybe 2 weeks, and then you go to work, and you're having a bad day, the sales aren't coming through, and you look down, oh my gosh, I forgot the box. Oh no, I left the box at home, this is why. Now we kind of laugh at this stuff, and yet we do this. And maybe not to this degree. But for me, I want to say the one thing that this story gave me, and maybe this is some of you this morning, I'm not going to sit here and tell you you need to burn your box. Some of you, that box is actually incredibly important. And if this story shows anything, it's that God is okay with that. We know God does not live in the Ark of the Covenant. And God does not go to battle. And yet God goes along with this whole thing. And I don't know any other way to say it. God goes along. Hey, I'll bring the box back to you, Israel. I'm back. God, you never left. You say that all throughout the Bible. You're everywhere. Your presence is here now, whether the box is there or not. And Israel somehow didn't seem to get that, and yet you go along with this. And to me, it gave me a lot of compassion and grace for people who still have God in the box. And I don't mean that as though they're lower than me, they haven't arrived. I actually mean it's important for some people in our lives. We go and say, you idiot, God doesn't live in the box. And it might be the worst thing you could say. Some of you do need to burn the box because you're still living for these, oh, remember when that happened? Remember when God was there? Remember, if I could just get back to there, then everything would be okay. You know, these things are happening because I didn't bring the box. I didn't bring God with me to the whatever. That's why it's not working. And we say, oh, I don't do that. And yes, we do. And some of you might need to just almost carry around this box for a week and then burn it. And it would all be symbolic, but it might be the most beautiful symbolic thing you've ever done. You know what? This stuff is toast. I am sick of this. There's all kinds of things God might teach you. I would encourage you to listen with this box. But here's maybe the one way I would end it. If there's any point to this entire grand story of the Bible, which we talk about all the time here, God does not live in the box. And God, in your life, if there's one thing I can guarantee you God will do, he's going to try to move you to a place where you open up the box and let God roam wild. Because that's where God is at. Wild animal. And if you're wondering, well, I didn't do this right, I didn't do that right, I didn't do this right, I might just say this. Maybe God is always just trying to say, open the box. I am not in there. I am way bigger, way more mysterious, way more complex, way more awesome, way more revolutionary, way more wild, way more about to rock your world than you can even imagine if you would just open that stinking box and let me out. Let's pray. God, I don't know. I didn't really wrap this one up, and I don't want to. So as we listen to the music, read words, maybe sing, I pray that you would speak. There's too many people in too many different situations. And I pray that you would speak personally. You are here in this place. Not because this is just a bigger box, but because you are everywhere. You are roaming. May we sense your presence. May we listen to you. And maybe throughout this week, may you speak to us about our misconceptions of you. May we have grace. May we be humble. And may we be challenged and moved to fall in more in love with a wild, amazing, loving, compassionate, holy, powerful God. We love you. Amen.